All right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Lots going on in the world of sports. The Cubbies have won their first series in playoff baseball at home. Ever in Wrigley Field at the very least. So everybody is happy apparently around town about that. And if you get on Facebook, I'm sure you know somebody who's knows like 30 friends who have all been celebrating this Cubs win. So I guess congratulations to the Cubs begrudgingly here on a Reds network. But we're also heading towards a big football weekend as always, as the Colts have the interesting game of the week, although it may be an interesting one-sided game as we all kind of expect as the Patriots come to town on Sunday night for Sunday Night Football. We'll have it for you here on WGCL. And the Hoosiers with what becomes a must-win game this weekend on homecoming as Rutgers comes to town, and Glass has no two ways about it. We are here on the air, not on the team. We project, we suggest, we speculate. We do all those things here on the air so we can look forward at the schedule. And there's at least three games on the schedule that don't look very good for the Hoosiers right this minute, and that is at Michigan State, home to Iowa and Michigan. Those latter two teams, two of the best running defenses in the league. And we've seen what teams that can do that have done the last 2 weeks to these Hoosiers. So that makes this game against Rutgers very crucial. Rutgers, Maryland, and Purdue are the other three games, and two of those are on the road. You cannot lose this game at home if you're going to get to six wins with this team right now, especially with the banged-up team and injured team we're looking at every Saturday.
Well, that's the key moving forward, is how do you get over this attrition? How do you get through these injuries? Because, well, they had a pretty good playbook on how to do it last year. At least it's not brand new territory for them, as Nate Sudfeld got hurt last year in the Missouri game, and you saw what happened after that. And the next win and final win after that was Purdue,
last game,
the bucket game, and that's one you always want to win. But with Indiana off to the 4-0 start, everybody feeling pretty good about things. Ohio State, again, Hoosiers got hurt in that game and found a way to be in it till the end, had a pass from the 9-yard line on the last play of the game that could have possibly tied it, and who knows what happened after that, or won it. Heck, could have gone for two. But now with a week of and 2 weeks of teams preparing for what isn't there, Dave, it hasn't been as smooth as sledding with, as we talked about on Monday, with Diamant sneaking in, for lack of a better term. No one thought that Sudfeld was going to miss any time for any reason this year.
Right.
Ohio State maybe caught a little cold there. I doubt they prepared much for him on the week, but Penn State did, and you saw the offense really, really sputter. And you made me think on Monday about the offensive line, and I think I've come up with a scenario that maybe makes a little bit of sense. It's apples and oranges, but I want you to hear it out.
Help me out.
Who has the best offensive line in the NFL?
In the NFL?
Yep. According to a lot of people.
That's
Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, they're running the ball the last 2 years.
No Tony Romo, no Dez Bryant, no DeMarco Murray, and the Cowboys aren't scoring any points either.
No.
And that's kind of the angle I'm taking there, because you asked on Monday, and I thought it was a really good question. Why isn't this line working?
Right.
And when you take those playmakers away, it all works in a different way, because you block differently for Sudfeld than you do for Diamant. You run different plays. You run different tempo. You run other things.
Well,
but the example that caught me.
I have a rebuttal.
The example that caught me, though, was everybody before the year talked about, and we talked about on the show, how good Dallas's offensive line is, and that's why they're better. But when they lose Romo, when they lose Dez Bryant, when they didn't really re-sign a running back, they really have Jason Witten, and that's about it.
And they've got another running back hurt and on IR
sure.
now. So.
And they've struggled to put up points. And I think, again, it's apples and oranges, but you've seen, shown last Saturday at Penn State, 248 yards, 7 points. That's with the same line that's not, quote-unquote, hurt or banged up.
Well, it's a legitimate point, and I'll always agree with that. You know, playmakers make you better. There's no question you need them now more than ever. Our matchups and playmakers in particular, and plays in space and one-on-ones, these are all so much more important in college football than they were 20 and 30 years ago. I mean, a big player back then was Anthony Thompson.
Sure.
And you could run him 6,000 times, and it didn't matter whether you had Ernie Jones healthy or not, because Anthony Thompson was still going to run. What I look at, though, again, the many times I've talked about an offensive line, and a good offensive offensive line. How many Wisconsin running backs do you remember tearing it up at the next level?
Yeah,
zero.
Absolutely.
I mean, Ron Dayne had a nice little career in the NFL, but nobody's ever going to say he was an all-pro guy in the NFL, and I could be wrong on that, but it certainly wasn't for multiple years, if anything. Melvin Gordon was a first-round draft pick. He waited until the very end of the first round to be drafted by the San Diego Chargers. He had 2,000 yards last year. 2 years ago, they had three running backs that all went for 100 yards in one game.
The system works.
Yeah, I mean, Alabama running backs. They had an Alabama running back won the Heisman Trophy and has been next to useless. Now, I won't say useless, but
he has not produced
like you would expect a Heisman Trophy running back to produce. Trent Richardson was drafted third overall. He can't play. He's out of the league. So these teams that have these big offensive lines and that commit to the running game, and most of those in those cases don't have crazy passing games that make you have to back way the hell off. They've got play action that they utilize, but they don't have crazy wide open passing games. Those are the teams that you can replace running backs with, and they continue to produce. Is Trent Richardson as a third string running back as a freshman better than our guy as a backup? Yeah, probably. But still, you've got a better offensive line up front. That, to me, is the difference, is that the teams that are committed to it and have had it for a while and have their system in place like that, they are able to do that and get some production out of it.
It's not easy. No,
I'm not saying it's easy when you lose a quarterback like Nate Sudfeld. It's not. I'm just surprised how quickly it's fallen off the cliff up front.
And when you don't have a bruising back like Howard, who gets hit and moves forward, we talked about how many carries
really
he doesn't
have
for loss or no gain. He had four or five of them against Ohio State, and he had four or five in his first 111 carries.
Well, look, here's
but
here's
that's the whole thing. You've got different guys running. Maybe a hole for Redding needs to be twice as big as it needs to be for Howard because he hits contact and moves on.
But here's the point.
You pass block differently for Diamond.
You watch a run game, you watch an offensive line block in the run game, and you can see whether there's a push up front or not. And honestly, the last couple of years, I didn't think there was phenomenal offensive line play, and yet you had a 2,000-yard rusher. Now, you can't take all the credit away from the offensive line in that case, but the point to me was that watching that team last year, even without Nate Sudfeld, what you got was you didn't get huge pushes. We couldn't get third and twos even with Tevin Coleman. We still couldn't do that. That's my big down is third and two because we can't get a third and two. But what he does do is you give him a little bit of a crease from your own 9-yard line at Ohio State, and it doesn't matter who's on defense, and it doesn't matter who's up front. He takes it to the house because he's a crazy talent. Now, would D'Angelo Roberts have gone 91 yards in that situation?
40.
Yeah, I mean, he would have gone 12 is what would have happened because he's a nice running back. But Tevin Coleman's a special running back, and that's the difference. We're not getting the 12. We're not getting any push. And what confirmed it for me is what we talked about on Monday also, that the coaches see something also. First 10 plays were pass plays. They really didn't think they could do anything up front.
Unless their scouting report said, hey, they jump.
Your two best players on your offense, you keep telling me, are on the offensive line.
They keep jumping first and second down. I don't know. We're not in that film session. I don't watch enough film to know if that's it. But usually those plays are based somewhat on tendency and sometimes what the defense does or what the defense expects you're going to do.
They're trying
to
stretch it
out
earlier. They're trying to be contrary. I mean, I get it a little bit, but I'm surprised that when they've got that strength, they aren't even attempting very little to really try to use it.
And it was interesting because those drives didn't even quote-unquote cost them the game. It was a back-and-forth ping-pong match at that time.
Right.
And it didn't hurt the chances. It didn't help the chances.
Both teams came out throwing the ball atrociously, too.
Right, and then when the Hoosiers finally got out of the shadow of their own goalpost, and they get a touchdown, that good stuff there. But again, there wasn't that constant threat of anything. You couldn't get guys down the field. You couldn't find – there wasn't anything. It was very vanilla. And sometimes I guess you need that. Maybe they knew it wasn't going to be their day. I'm not sure how that works out. But you just didn't see – you didn't feel like there was going to be that chunk play. Where was it going to come from? They had plenty of pressure in the backfield. They couldn't get the running game going. Had third and long all day. And that's why you have 11 punts. You're not going to win any games on the road with 11 punts.
And to be fair, going into the Penn State game, they had played lousy. The offensive line did against Ohio State. They really got dominated all day. So I can understand them maybe not feeling the greatest about themselves.
Sure, or they're nicked up and nobody wants to talk about
it. That's the part I'd like to know about. 333-2665 is our phone number. Let's bring in Greg. How you doing, Greg?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What's happening, buddy?
Well, the only reason I was calling actually was Dave was talking about those Wisconsin running backs and all that kind of stuff. And it's funny because that whole scheme is in Wisconsin is that zone blocking, which is the same thing that the Denver Broncos used to do under Mike Shanahan. And it was plug a running back in there and then
Mike Anderson, Terrell Davis, et cetera. You could start rattling them off.
Yep, and then, you know, Shanahan tried to do the same thing in Washington, which, you know, kind of worked.
Yeah, Clint Wisconsin was decent.
Right. The Wisconsin was renowned for that. That's all they ever did, and that's why Gordon was so successful. That's why Ron Bain had such a huge career in college, was that zone blocking scheme, which is not something that IU can do.
Yeah, the reason why, Greg, is you're nailing it, because Wisconsin recruits to that. Wisconsin teaches that. They don't have to start four freshmen on their line, so guys get a year to get that under their belt.
Wisconsin's one example of being able to plug and play. I mentioned Alabama also. But the other part of the Wisconsin thing here is Wisconsin has pretty much only once had what you'd call in the last 10, 15 years a dynamic quarterback. You've had a couple that have had some decent legs.
Russell Wilson for
1 year as a grad assistant, he was the closest thing to anything approaching an all-conference type wide quarterback. Now, they might have guys that put up some decent numbers throwing 80-yard play-action passes, but none of them were particularly spectacular. It said, I got to sit six guys back in coverage and be loose against the run
to
guard
against. That's the other unbelievable thing. You know it's going to be run all day, and they still run on you all day.
Well, and the point is that I think IU's offensive line is really a class act, just like, you know, the Cowboys' offensive line that you mentioned earlier. They're really great, and they do get a good push. The problem is when your skill players are out, and Jordan Howard is I don't care what anybody says, that kid is a stud.
Yeah,
you
can,
absolutely.
And I think we have decent receivers. I think they're going to grow into their positions. But when you got a kid back there like Diamant, who really kind of does still look like a deer in the headlights, even though he's put on some weight and he's done some things.
Yeah, the analogy I use is it's a little backyard football-ish. It seems everything breaks down quicker. It seems like you're asking guys to run sharp routes, but your quarterback's on the run for his life, and it doesn't work out.
Well, he doesn't have the football IQ that Sudfeld has, and I think that really, you know, the line, they don't block any differently. They're blocking the same way, but they're expecting different results because you got Diamant back there as opposed to Sudfeld. Sudfeld's going to do one thing. Diamant does something completely different, and it just breaks down simply because of the fact that he doesn't have the same awareness and football IQ that Sudfeld has.
And so that's fair. And maybe there are plays that he doesn't get them into because that's also part of the quarterback position that always gets ignored. Everybody says, why don't you throw the guy out there that's got the huge arm? Well, you know what? If he's not getting you into the right plays and things like that and getting you the right side, that hurts. It just to throw some numbers
Diamant
out at you.
Plays with a survivability more than Sudfeld does.
He's a freelancer. Let's be fair about it. Tevin Coleman last year averaged 7.5 yards a carry. Tevin Coleman had the best big play ability of any running back I've ever seen at Indiana. D'Angelo Roberts, as his backup last year, had 107 carries, 4.6 yards average. And that's a drop-off, but wouldn't you take 4.6 yards a carry all day long?
Period.
I certainly would. Here's what we look at this year. Jordan Howard has 5.7 yards a carry. Devine Redding has 2.9 yards a carry. I don't know that I feel I've seen enough out of Devine Redding right now to know that he's that much different than Jordan Howard or even D'Angelo Roberts, but clearly he's not going anywhere against against the better defenses they've faced. So I want to be fair about that. But the eye test here, the last two games, that offensive line has gotten handled in a big way.
And Redding had, 40 carries in the last two games for 50 yards?
Quite a bit, yeah.
Well, I mean, he was 30 for 45 against Ohio State. I can't remember off the top of my head what he did on Saturday. So, Greg, what's the answer to the question? You just wait for everybody to get healthy?
Well, there's no real good answer.
I'm with you, but I think the offense has to get – I think it's got to get more dynamic. I think you got to get the kid out of the pocket where he's comfortable.
If anything, I don't think anybody's afraid of us going down the field on him. They really aren't.
And they take checks.
I mean, is Sudfeld playing this weekend, or are they still listening?
We don't know. Nobody knows.
Because that's kind of the issue is that, you know, if you have Diamant back there, maybe you look at more play action, maybe you do some more.
We couldn't run the ball in the first half when we had Howard – and Sudfeld against Ohio State. They got this, I mean, the first two plays of the game were 1 yard total.
But the big issue here is that you can't do a lot of those dynamic things if you've got an offensive line that isn't capable of doing that down blocking and the pulling in the zone and that kind of thing that a Wisconsin team will do, where you watch that whole line, you know, as soon as that ball is snapped, everybody moves, you know, 3 yards to the left and they're making that hole.
Right.
We're not doing that. We're pushing. We're not, you know, and you know, we do some pulling and what have you, but we can't get rollouts or do boots if we don't have that ability on the front. And I don't think that's what we have right now. I don't think the talent level is there to be able to accommodate that. So really we just have to make do with what we've got and take some shots occasionally. I think that's the big thing is that we're not really taking shots. I mean, we are, but we're not.
Who's the guy you take a shot to?
Not down the field, like a semi-cobs. Greg, we got to let you go because we're way late on a break. Great call. Very good call.
Paying attention.
I will say this. When this year they've put the two tight ends in the game and have committed to the running game, they'll pull people, they'll do a lot of stuff with it. They have looked as good as any offensive line I've seen in Indiana in 15 to 20 years. And you know me, I don't dole out that kind of praise on the offensive line. I've been down on them the last couple of years when everybody else has been talking about how great they are because, again, in big spots, they couldn't do it. Well, they've done it all year until the Ohio State game. Two good fronts. I want to give them credit on that. It is just surprising to me they haven't been able to get anything done outside of one run by Xander Diamant.
All that talent around
And it's healthy. I mean, as far as we know, the offensive line is healthy. At the very least, the five bodies are still available.
Makes you easier to defend when you don't have to put dime coverage in, and you can blitz whenever you want, essentially, and that's how it goes. Quick update from Skydome or Rogers Center, whatever they call that. Edwin Encarnacion's solo home run in the bottom of the sixth has tied Texas and Toronto 2-2 here in the top of the seventh. It's win and move on, lose and go home. Game five north of the border. Game five in Kansas City and Houston tonight at 8:07. The Cubbies are the only team in right now, and the Mets and Dodgers go tomorrow night. So plenty of baseball action to keep you through the evening.
Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. We'll look forward to Saturday for the Hoosiers when we get back. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
A blink for 1 second and the Texas Rangers have the lead again.
What?
In Toronto. And the Jumbotron there says, fans are requested to refrain from throwing objects on the field. So obviously I've missed a call that set them off. There are Molson cans all over the outfield. Look at this guy. Poor guy's got to carry them all back himself. He get a nickel a can for those in Toronto, won't he?
Are they any in full? Maybe you can drink them, too.
A little bit of dripping. Troy Tulowitzki is not happy. Look at the size of the dip that umpire's got in. My goodness.
He's probably all with it, too.
He is. So there was a play that has caused some controversy. And when we get a replay, I'll fill you in on all that.
333-2665 is the phone number. The short segment here, so we'll go ahead and work our way to the Hoosiers this weekend at Rutgers. Keys to the game. Look, Rutgers has got some athletes out there. They've been recruiting as a program. I won't say a higher level. I don't know exactly what that means, but they've been doing it a little bit longer as a program with some success behind them. They've gone to, I think, 7 bowl games in 8 years, I believe it is, or maybe even more than that. They've had some success. They've had their name out there. Certainly their name this year has been a little goofy. There's no question they've got some problems at the moment there, but talent-wise, they've got some talent they'll throw out there and some athleticism they throw out there. The whole question, I mean, it comes down to, Glass, what is this team supposed to do well for the Hoosiers? It's supposed to score points. It's supposed to move up and down the field. Whether it's Howard or Sudfeld or Diamant, and it's not going to be Diamant, or Cameron or whoever the heck else, and Redding and whoever, they've got to find a way to move the ball and score some points. You can't expect the defense is going to win this game for you. If it does, great. But this team can't go into games like that right now.
No, and they can't be -9 in the time of possession department either. Remember, Rutgers played Michigan State last weekend off a bye week. So read into that what you will. They had 2 weeks to get ready for them. But Connor Cook's a better quarterback than Xander Diamant. I don't think many people would argue with me on that. Michigan State did not have their way with them offensively. Michigan State hasn't had their way with many teams offensively. So I don't know how deep to look into that. The key to Rutgers is they've got their big play wide receiver back. He was suspended for the first 4 or 5 games of the year. He's come back, and I think he's got 8 catches for 4 touchdowns. And he caught 3 for 147, and I think all 3 passes were touchdown catches against Michigan State, who usually is known for a very solid defense and especially a very solid secondary. But where is Indiana going to create that space, Dave? Is it going to be from bootlegs? Is it going to be from lineup and we're going to run it right up the middle and see what you can do? You can't have guys dropping passes. You can't have guys dropping passes for first downs. But who's going to be the quarterback? It's not going to be Xander Diamant. His arm's in a sling and he might be concussed. It might not be Nick Nate Sudfeld. So I don't want to speak negatively of Danny Cameron, but it's not fair to him, just like we had to sit here at this exact same time last year and talk about Diamond. It's not fair to say, oh, come on, Danny, it's homecoming.
What the heck?
Come on, let's go. Big crowd, everybody's fine.
Time to make big boys.
That's not how it works. And there's a reason they probably wanted to redshirt Cameron or bring him along slowly because they don't get a lot of work in practice running the main stuff. That's what Sudfeld and Diamant do.
Well, here's the thing.
And to go, hey, Divine Redding and Danny Cameron.
Figure it out.
Let's go. Exactly. But here's what I like about Cameron over Diamant. You might get some pocket passing. You might be able to get some stuff down the field.
He's a better downfield thrower. He's not nearly as mobile.
No, and he's not. And he is not going to save you yards when you are 8 yards in the backfield. Diamant can break it.
Right.
But you don't have Diamant. It's not like Cameron beat him out. Diamant's arm is in a sling.
He's gone.
He's not.
You can't go back to him.
You can't go back to him. And it's Nate Boudreaux after that. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's going to be. So what do you do? You have to shorten the game. And you have to score when you're inside in the red zone. You can't kick field goals because that's not going to be it. So if Wilson doesn't empty the chamber with whatever it takes to get this team in the end zone, right, I would be completely shocked. I wouldn't be surprised again if they came out and threw 10 passes to start with because, hey, you've got to do something to keep them off balance. They saw last week when they tried to run the ball, they didn't have a lot of success with it. But now you've got a different passer, I think you might have a different angle.
I've seen 2 weeks of this offensive line just get shredded itself when I thought it was a strength of the team. So
they
at this point in time,
back.
I don't care what they try.
They're allowed to bounce back.
Yeah.
They're allowed to figure it out.
Certainly a couple shots down the field. And again, I keep bringing up Simi Cobbs' name for two reasons. First of all, he's the one receiver that you've seen a little bit out of prior to this year that you wanted to see a lot more, who showed you some more. Now, he can show you even more than he has now. But he's got the height. He's got the athleticism. He's got the strength to go down there and get some balls. If you give him some jump balls, it'd be nice to see if you can get that going. Ricky Jones is having a nice year. I think he feeds a little bit more off of other looks and gets open in space as opposed to being the focus guy down the sideline.
Those aren't things you can abandon. Where's the bubble screen? Where's the quick out? And you know what I think would be interesting too, but it's going to be hard to do with a quarterback who hasn't taken as many snaps as Cameron. I'd like to see some tempo to keep Rutgers off balance.
Sure.
Something you haven't seen. But again, how much do you put on Cameron's plate? Do you make him a game manager to get you through it and hope you cash in when you get in the red zone, or do you open it up and say, hey, you got a good arm, we know you can throw it, we're going to put you in some spots where we're going to ask you a couple times to make some throws?
The reason I didn't like starting the game out with 10 play pass calls last year with Xander Diamant is clearly pass calls, especially over the middle type stuff, precision type stuff, to me is not his strength. I could easily say he's really bad at it. That wouldn't be entirely fair, but that's not. I mean, so why you would want to do that to start off? Yeah, that part I don't get. You want to run a little read action, let him run the ball a little bit and get into the flow of the game. That would make a little bit of sense to me.
Or you can't run him in read action because if he gets hit and breaks his arm, you're down to your third quarter.
Happened anyways because he's scrambling around because that's the kind of, you know, kid he wants to run around and make a play. I get that part. With Danny Cameron, I can understand it a little bit more because, again, he's a guy that's going to sit in the pocket a little bit more, and he's going to be a little bit more accurate. That's the thing he showed you. He's got a better arm. He's got a more accurate arm. He's not Nate Sudfeld right now, so that expectation is a little crazy.
Let me give you the baseball update because this is a beauty. There were beer cans on the field, as we told you. Here's what happened. Runner on third, two outs for Texas.
Okay.
Pitches a ball up in the zone. Catcher kind of fumbles around with it in his glove, goes to throw it back to the pitcher, and throws it, and it hits the Texas bat in the batter's box. The third baseman is playing back because there's two strikes and the guy's not going to bunt.
Right.
Hits the bat, rolls down the third baseline.
Runner
from third comes home and scores. What's the call? Well,
they're still waiting on the call?
The call has been made by the umpires. They got together and talked about it. They have awarded Texas the run. They have reviewed it, and I believe the call has stood this entire time before the last time, this whole segment, Dave. This is the first pitch since that has happened.
Uh-huh.
So they have been looking at it and looking at it. The last time I looked over at the Toronto dugout, they were pointing to see who was being ejected from their dugout. So if you don't think that reality, or if sports is the best reality television going, I don't know what to tell you. Here is the play again. You can see it now. Pitch up in the zone. Catcher looks, goofs around with it, throws it right off the guy's bat.
Guy's not doing anything.
He's not
just
doing anything.
Himself.
The umpire immediately calls timeout. So they got together and talked about it and said, hey, it's not interference of any kind. The guy's standing there doing it. It's a bad throw by the catcher. It's a lazy throw by the catcher. They reviewed it. It held up. I don't know who did or didn't get ejected from Toronto, but they were pointing to guys in the dugout, sending them down.
Crazy.
And it looked like some of the Toronto wives and girlfriends maybe were hit with beer cans and didn't make the field. Oh, my.
Well, that's not very nice.
Baseball north of the border. You went to a baseball game and a hockey game broke out.
Nice.
These things happen.
Well, it is Canada after all.
Eh?
We got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is a phone number. And when we get back, we will give you our prediction of IU Rutgers homecoming this weekend. And we'll move then on to the Colts, who've got a big game against the Patriots coming up. We'll see if the Colts can hold them under 100. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
Give us the baseball update. You got some information there at the break.
Well, yeah.
Sort of.
So describe the play for me, and then I'll tell you what happened here.
2-2 pitches up in the zone. Catcher catches it. Ball three. The catcher brings his mitt down and kind of loses the grip, so he's got to regrip the baseball. And obviously, he's right-handed. All catchers are. The left-handed batter's box is occupied by a Texas Ranger. And he's goofing around with his bat just like every guy does.
He's not supposed to leave the box, really.
No, he's in the box.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, he's in his space, and the bat, he's kind of fiddling around with his grip, and the bat's kind of leaning out.
He's really just holding it out.
Yeah, he's kind of just messing with it and holding the bat out just like you see a million guys do after every play. So the catcher goes to throw the ball back to the pitcher. It hits that bat. Right arm into left bat and rolls up the third baseline. Well, the third baseman's nowhere in sight because he's playing back deep on the carpet in Toronto because there's two strikes. There's not a bunt. If a guy gets a hold of one, he wants to be alive when he makes the play at first. And the runner on third base for Texas says, hey, the ball's there. That's a live ball. It's no different than throwing it over the pitcher's head or trying to pick off a guy down at second base and you chuck it into the outfield. Ball's live. It looks like. So he goes home and scores.
Right.
The umpires call timeout because they're not sure what to do, and that's where you come in.
That's where I come in. Now, this is a reporting from somebody who's at the game.
We don't have volume in the studio. That's why we can't help you. We have to go to the internet.
But he says nothing about time being called during the play. He says umpire Dale Scott ruled the ball dead and that Oder had to return to third base. This was initially after the play he ruled that. After a conversation with, here's the key, Rangers manager Jeff Bannister, though, he convened the rest of the six-man umpiring crew for a conversation. After a long conversation, the umpires reversed themselves and allowed the run to score.
Which I believe is correct.
Which would be correct. I don't see why it wouldn't be.
The ball, it is no
but
different.
I can see why the Toronto team would be mad after seeing him talk to the Rangers guys.
If you get it wrong at first base and your manager runs out and argues and they say, you know what, I'll go get help.
We'll talk about it.
And they say, hey, Dave, he missed the base. He's got to be safe. And you say, okay, I didn't see it. And you call him safe.
Right.
Well, the other manager's going to come out and raise hell as well.
Which happened, and understandably. But I don't know how you call it any differently. I mean, it's
everybody was in play.
Somebody else said on here that perhaps the discussion would be or the question would be, was it willful interference
it
on the part of the batter?
There's
the batter
no chance. He's not looking at the ball. He's looking at his arms.
He's fiddling with
his
arm or his elbow thing or something on his left hand that's holding the bat out across the plate.
Now, and if you want to look at intent, you'd think the ball's coming from behind the batter.
Yeah.
It's not coming towards the batter.
Right.
So if the rule is willful, there's no chance
he was holding the bat there.
You have seen in the blooper reels where the catcher catches it and the guy bends down to tie a shoe and the throw hits off his helmet.
Right.
Well, if there's not anybody on base, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But if there is somebody on base, the ball's live.
I mean, look out,
the ball's inside the park, it's live. Hit foul.
If the batter did this intentionally, it is one of the
greatest
cheekiest,
plays ever,
smartest,
ever.
You know, cleverest things you've ever
it's
seen.
Not.
And I don't think it is.
The Blue Jays haven't put it together yet.
Shin Soo Chu, former Cleveland Indian, by the way.
He homered today. That was, I think, their first run. The Blue Jays now have men on first and second as they're trying to rebound from this as Texas botches at least a force out at second. So it's all going on, and Fox Sports 1 has it, if you can't believe our descriptions.
Russell Martin running inside the baseline there.
Completely legal. As long as you're within either
to interfere either with the throw and make it harder. So good job him.
Who says baseball is boring? Cole Hamels now, two on, no outs, top of seven, the veteran lefty that Texas picked up at the trade deadline. Remember when I laughed at that and said, what is Texas doing? They're nine games out of first place. They end up winning their division.
They went nuts.
They went crazy nuts. And Hamels was a big deal behind that. So there you go. Don't forget, you baseball fans, won't Houston and Kansas City, game five, that is the clincher for one of them, coming up 8:07 in Kansas City. And the weather, I don't think there's any problems because it's sunshine here for the next week, so it should be fine.
We'll give you our programming notes, all football here in just a few minutes after the next break. But before we get there, IU hosts Rutgers on Saturday for homecoming. 3:30 is the start. It is on the BTN. Over the weekend, Glass, again, the next three games are Michigan State. You do have a bye week, but then you've got home games against Iowa and Michigan. Those are three of the best defenses in the league, and Iowa and Michigan in particular are just killing people trying
Michigan
to run the ball.
Michigan hasn't given up a point in
Michigan
three games.
Has three shutouts.
In a row, don't they?
I'd have to look
it's
at their
It's two
in a row
for sure.
You might be right. I
know
think
it's
it is.
Two in a row. I know they shut out
it
Northwestern.
It was BYU in their last game. I believe you're right. Which is absurd to have three anyways, but three in a row
hasn't
is even
happened
sillier.
Since like 1985.
All against Big Five type of teams. BYU's a talented team.
Northwestern was ranked higher than Michigan in that game.
You're going to really struggle against those two teams, especially if you're still banged up. Michigan State on the road is going to be very difficult. You cannot lose this game this weekend. You've got to beat Rutgers. You've got to find any way to beat Rutgers. Six fake punts. Anything, everything's on the table this week.
And again, if you can't beat Rutgers, the fan is going to go.
What?
The fan is going to go.
Yeah, see ya.
And that's the tough part with IU football because they don't have that cachet yet where they say, okay, we can pick it up and do it again. I'm going to give them a little bit of pass on the injuries. You have to. When you base your whole fall camp around Nate Sudfeld being healthy and being the guy to go, and what are you going to do when he gets hurt and Diamont gets hurt? I don't care that it happened last year. You can't just flip to page 86 in the manual and say, okay, here's what you do.
Sure.
But here's what you need to do. You need to find a way. That has to be the new mantra for IU football because everybody wanted to see how the reaction would be after the Ohio State game on the road at Penn State. Well, you did it without your two best players and your offense went nowhere. Now you've had 2 weeks of practice without those players.
Mm-hmm.
You had to have found something that works. Not 500 yards of offense works, but something that works.
Right.
You have to have a game plan, whether it's shorten the game, whether it's speed up the tempo, whether it's double reverse on the first punt, whether it's onside kick every time, go for two. I don't care. Mm-hmm. You had to have found something besides hand the ball off and hope you find some yardage. I don't think you can do that, even against quote-unquote Rutgers. I don't think that happens. I don't think Wilson thinks that way. I don't think it's going to be a vanilla game. But if Danny Cameron has to play quarterback, don't expect bomb after bomb down the sidelines.
It's going to
be a well-managed game.
And to me, the tempo concerns me a little bit.
Yeah,
because
that's harder to
they
do.
Tend to go with, let's get crazy on offense and try to score more points, even though we're banged up on offense.
It's 3-0.
It should be harder in that case to score more points. Maybe look at the defense. And the defense, I say it again, this defense is not a great defense. People are giving it a lot of credit.
No.
I don't know why.
They have a chance
what
to make
plays. What they did not do
defense.
Against Penn State that made that a blowout as opposed to Ohio State that made it close is the same thing they had done all the year up to there.
Turnovers.
Against
turnovers,
Penn State, they did
turnovers.
Not get any turnovers. They got one. It was even on the day. If they can get you three or four turnovers against Rutgers, you can be in the game. But here again, now the pressure is suddenly on the defense to have to produce for you because if Rutgers is scoring 28 points, you're probably not winning this game if Nate Sudfeld and Jordan Howard are out.
Bases loaded in Texas, Dave. 3-2. Nobody out. Cole Hamels still on the mound. I think Indiana finds a way, and I don't think it's going to be pretty. 19-17, something like that, where Griffin Oaks is going to kick 6.5 field goals. Wouldn't surprise me because if you can get them in space around the 40-yard line, he's got enough leg. You can take some chances with him. He's shown big kicks before, and if that has to be your best offensive attack, if things slow down, at least they're capable of doing that.
Taking the points this week, you're going to need them.
Yes.
And you need your defense to help you out a little bit more than
I think the defense will be a little bit stronger. The thing that will kill them, and you saw it last week, it can't be 19-7 in the second quarter.
Right.
Where it's two scores down,
right.
and this is nothing against Danny Cameron, I'm going to say it for the 400th time, you can't expect him to bring you back with 12, 15, 20 college snaps whether it's at home or anything else. What do? One step drop, screen, make a guy beat a guy one-on-one on the outside. Right. What do? Do it the next play on the other side.
Defense has got to get
turnovers.
Find
your tight ends in the defense.
And they have to know where Carew is. Here's the good news. You've got a couple guys that have been applying some pressure here recently.
Yeah, Mangieri and Shaw have been really good. That's fair. I've been all over Mangieri.
The coaches,
all year.
Brian Noor likes to throw a lot of different blitz looks. This would be a good week to do that against a young quarterback who's already rattled from what happened last week.
Yes.
So you can show him some looks that he isn't
the ball
expecting.
On fourth down.
It's exactly right. So,
that's what happened.
His mentality is not perfect. He's not the 4-year or 3-year starter that they had before that. So if you want to rattle a guy with a little bit of pass rush. Again, this is a week where the defense needs to step up.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't have to hold them to 100 yards, but it's a week where they've got a real chance, I think, to affect the game more dramatically than just the turnovers. I think they can really help and do a decent job controlling Rutgers. Will they? I don't know. But you got to expect them to at least help you out in this situation. They've got to be their best
17
this weekend.
Hoosiers, baby. Homecoming madness.
I will say 21-18, close enough. But you're exactly right. If this is a high-scoring game, I'm not sure how we keep up. And I'll suggest one other thing.
Multiple defensive touchdowns.
Nate Sudfeld was cleared to play last week, and the coaches determined he wasn't mobile enough. You might have to get Nate out there toughen it out. And I think Nate will probably do it. He was right in the middle of all those huddles. He wanted to be out there.
He wanted to.
That was a coach's decision, not a Nate decision. This is one of those games where I don't know.
That should be 2 full weeks.
I think he's got to go out there.
Of rehab, and he should be a little bit fresher and a little bit more mobile.
Hey, folks, got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is our phone number. We'll give you our football programming notes when we get back, and also look at the Colts as they bring the New England Patriots to town on Sunday night. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Quick programming notes again. We've got all kinds of football coming up over the weekend. Starting tomorrow night, 8 o'clock pregame for Atlanta at New Orleans. Again, Thursday nights all here on WGCL, and they're all division games. So some interesting subplots there. Atlanta undefeated at the moment. Friday night, we've got the South Panthers trying to stay undefeated and finish their regular season that way, and also win the Conference Indiana title outright as they invite Perry Meridian to town. Perry Meridian 5-3 and 4-2 in the conference, so it'll be a tough one, but it's seniors night at Fred Huff Field. Chalk Talk, 7 o'clock, kickoff at 7:30.
And we have breaking news from Perry Meridian. They have just left now, so they can get here on time.
So we'll be able to start on time.
That's
excellent,
right.
Excellent. Saturday. We've
big
got
one.
A big Big Ten and national game all of a sudden here as Michigan State and Michigan play. 2:30 pregame, 3:30 kickoff for that. Again, Michigan, 3 straight shutouts. That is just absurd.
That doesn't make sense.
That is insane. And then Sunday night football, of course, we have the Colts broadcast of Sunday night football as they bring the Patriots to town. And Glass, we joke about how many points the Patriots are going to score on the Colts. And, of course, a lot of that joking has to do with the Deflategate situation and them wanting to deliver a message back, so to speak. But really, I mean, what it comes down with to start with is they've been destroyed the last couple times they played the Patriots. They run roughshod all over them, literally run roughshod all over them. And scored a ton of points. I'm not sure they stopped scoring from the last time, and now they're angry at the Colts and want to put up more points.
Well,
and the Colts are banged up.
Their offense has been good. Their defense has been good.
And Nate Boudreau might be starting for the Colts this weekend.
That could be possible. Watch this play on the baseball. This game gets bizarre by the inning. Bases loaded, one out. Again, Texas was leading 3-2. Toronto's at the plate. Bases are loaded. Batista swings as hard as he can and hits a duck snort. The second baseman backs up and can't make the play. Look at the backspin on the ball. It almost stops when he misses it. So, again, the runners have to hold. They're not sure if he's going to catch it or not. And it gets over his head. One run is in. The force at second. Yes. It's just it's getting creepier and creepier. Here's what I'm going to show. I'm going to throw out at you. Andrew Luck has been unhealthy the entire season, true or false? I think it's false. He just hasn't looked himself. He hasn't thrown the ball confidently. He hasn't played very well. That's the honest truth.
At least two games, obviously, because he's missed them both. And perhaps
the Buffalo
and he's probably
Bills,
hurt in the third one.
The Buffalo – or he got hurt in the first one. Didn't tell anybody.
Right.
The Buffalo Bills played the Patriots the week after they beat the Colts handily and were handed their lunch on their home field by New England. So if you want to play the old whatever that game's called, the connect the dots game, that might not be the game. Each week in the NFL is a new deal. The Colts have to be confident.
The transitive property where the Colts still get beat by 60.
That's right. Your mother beat my mother's brother, and yes, and they're going to beat you by 90. But the Colts went on the road and won at Houston on a short week with a sick quarterback. Slowed down J.J. Watt, slowed down Jadavian Clowney, slowed down Brian Cushing, Vince Wilfork. They ran for 95 yards. Hasselbeck had a very solid day throwing the football. They don't turn it over, Dave. That's another good thing to do. So you just got to check off all those boxes against New England. And the best way to beat the Patriots is how? Keep Tom Brady off the field. Keep Gronkowski off the field. You have to have drives that chew up clock. Gore is going to have to run. And the thing that we always like about the Colts, they have to have 8 or 9 guys in the pattern. They're going to take away T.Y. Hilton, which they've done, it seems like, every game. Then Moncrief's got to make a play. Dorsett's got to make a play. Mm-hmm. Andre Johnson. Hey, how about that as a matchup problem?
Sure.
That's, again, the Colts. And, of course, there's a 3-run home run by Joey Bautista off the second deck.
So they can quit complaining about the call a little while ago.
You can tear up that protest. Joey Bats, that's a 4-run inning now for Toronto, a 3-run home run. You can't make it up, folks, if you blink. This game, since we've been on the air.
Yeah.
This game was 2-1, nothing happening. The second you flipped the microphone, Encarnacion hits one off the third deck.
Well, and you had a play at the plate they had to review or do something with after that, too.
It's been absolutely bonkers. But I think the Colts might surprise some people on Sunday night. Beware the wounded animal, especially at home in the NFL. New England's going to lose 2 or 3 games a year. This wouldn't surprise me if it was one of them.
Well, that's awfully positive thinking of you. So we all appreciate that. But the bottom line is they haven't stood up to the Patriots. Back when we thought they were evenly matched in some fashion. They've been steamrolled. It hasn't been close the last couple times they played. Well, they're all big anyways, but then you put them in the playoffs and they've gotten steamrolled just as badly, if not worse, there. So all of that, look, I don't know how much I buy into the Patriots wanting to do this or that. I'm sure they're not going to take the pedal off, and I wouldn't blame them at all. I don't see a way the Colts compete in this. I just don't.
You don't see where they can compete?
Their offense line stinks. Their defense isn't stopping much of anything that isn't the AFC South. Look, the Patriots, you don't in the NFL score 80 points like you do in college.
And now we got a brawl. You can't make it up.
I think this is 49-10. I mean, I think this is just an absolute destruction.
Benches have cleared in Toronto. Yeah,
well, hopefully Toronto doesn't get everybody kicked out of this game and suspended for their next series now that they have a 6-3 lead.
Yeah, who's the meathead that's trying to get in the middle of this with a 3-run lead in the 7th? You can't make it up, folks. Turn on your TV.
Folks, music means we got to head on out of here. We'll return Monday to talk about a big football weekend and apparently some Blue Jays suspensions. And we will talk to you Monday. You've been in the zone.